order, please. This is a joint meeting of the State and House Education Committees. Pleased to see everyone here this morning. We have Senator Dunleavy, Senate President Huggins, and myself, Stevens. And would you, Representative Gaddis, introduce the members of the House?
Yes, and on the House side, we have Representative Drummond, Representative Sadler, myself, Representative Gaddis, Representative Reinbold, and Representative Seaton. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have with us the Chair of the Jim Mariner, the Chair of the Lassen State Board of Education Early Development. Pleased to have you with us, Jim. Thanks so much. And we also have your, I think your wingman is in the audience, the Commissioner of Education and his staff. And we also have Senator Gardner joining us. Please, go ahead if you would, Jim.
Well, good morning. First of all, let me just thank each and every one of you for being willing to sit on the education committees. It's another one of your duties, but I understand that you're all here by choice and appreciate the time and the energy and the opportunity that you have to serve the students of Alaska. For those of you who don't know me well at all or at all, I am a lifelong Alaskan, born and reared here in the great state of Alaska. I'm the father of four. Oldest is 16, youngest is 8, two boys on the end, two wonderful, lovely girls in the middle, a 14-year-old and a soon-to-be 11-year-old, and husband of one. And I remember watching Esther Cox, the chair from last year, and I remember most of the camera angle was from back here, and the reason I mention that is because my four children, homeschooled with my lovely certificated teacher wife, they're watching, and my 14-year-old daughter is always teasing me about the back of my head's getting a little thin, so she's probably going to have a little evidence today. So anyway, I was planning originally, I mentioned in a recent board meeting, to do a little PowerPoint for y'all, and I was roundly suggested strongly that I don't do a PowerPoint, and so I don't have a PowerPoint. I'm hoping that you have in front of you the copy of the annual written report from the department?
Yes, we do.
Okay. I'm going to kind of walk us through that a little bit, just sections of it that I've kind of chosen to highlight. I have found out since that reprimand, so to speak, at the last board meeting, that the commissioner, I have a copy of one of his PowerPoints to the Senate Education Committee. I thought that was funny. Anyway, so let's go to turn to page one. Not to the table of contents, to page one proper. And I'm just going to start with the mission statement of the Department of Education. And I have a reason for reminding us of this, that we do start our board meetings with a reminder of the mission every time. To ensure quality standards-based instruction to improve academic achievement for all students. And I mention, or I try to emphasize the standards-based there, because if you don't mind turning to pages 8 and 9, and just focus on page 9. This is about the standards that we passed, that we adopted in June of this last year. Our new K-12 standards, and I just wanted to basically remind everybody that the rigor of the standards has now gone up. The standards that we had prior did not go all the way to 12th grade, so this is the first. These are the first standards that go K-12, and these standards are close enough aligned to the Common Core standards, which have been adopted nationwide by 46 other states in the District of Columbia, that we can use off-the-shelf curriculum. We are looking as a state at possibly using an assessment that's based off of the Common Core. So that is one thing I wanted to point out about the standards. Regarding the rigor, Representative Gaddis and Representative Reinbold happened to attend the same conference I did, and we had the privilege of listening to Condoleezza Rice. And I wrote a quote down. She said, "If you have low expectations of even the best of students, they will live down to them." And it just resonated with me as we had just had that discussion and that vote in June about the need for high expectations for our students. And so I thought that was great from Condoleezza Rice. The new
Could you excuse me for a moment? We'll let the record show that Representative Ledoux has joined us. Thank you.
Good morning, Representative Ledoux.
Good morning.
The only other thing I wanted to point out about the standards, and it's the first bullet point of the second set of bullet points there. Alaska's graduates will be able to compete with graduates nationwide, and I want to also include in there internationally. So we want to make sure that we prepare our students properly. If you don't mind now flipping backwards, I'm going to kind of go backwards in the report to page 3. The very center of the page there, there's this paragraph. I'm going to go ahead and read to everybody. This is the section that's talking about teacher quality, and particularly right here about the teacher and administrator evaluation regulations that were just adopted in December by the State Board. Responding to recommendations from a statewide group of K-12 and college educators called the Teacher Quality Working Group, which had about 40 members and they met over the course of a few years, the State Board adopted amendments that would require districts to assess whether teachers, principals, and service providers, such as school psychologists, are exemplary, proficient, basic, or unsatisfactory in each of the state's professional content standards and in overall performance, and they also have to meet the cultural standards. There are four of those. And I have a page from the PowerPoint that the commissioner used recently. It talks about the content, the performance standards, 8 original ones, 1 has been removed, and 1 has been added. So the one that's been added, a teacher helps students grow academically as measured by learning data. And so this is the new one that if you actually, page 3, that next paragraph there, kind of the long one there on page 3, kind of talks about some of the details regarding the student growth data. Just want to remind everyone, this is growth within a classroom setting from the time the teacher has a student to the time that same teacher exits the student from the class. How much growth did that student show working under that teacher or within that school? Do we want to open it up for questions throughout, or?
Thank you, Jim. I think if there are any questions, if they would raise their hands, if you don't mind, we'll just interrupt you the time. Representative Dunleavy.
Through the chair, just a quick question. I think I may have missed this, but earlier when you said the Common Core curriculum standards were being adopted, you said there was a new assessment, or you said something about assessment that I missed.
Yes, thank you, Senator Dunleavy, through the chair. The state is looking at potentially, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, Commissioner, adopting an assessment that's being created as we speak by a consortium of 25 states or something like that called the Smarter Balance Consortium. And there's another consortium of the other states called PARC. But Alaska's looking at potentially adopting an assessment in the Smarter Balance Consortium.
Would that be in addition to the SBAs and the high school qualifying exam?
No, those are going to be removed at the same time these are going to be adopted.
This will be a replacement.
Replacement. And I believe it's 2015 or 2016 that this new assessment will come online. I don't believe have made that determination yet.
One last question. Is the idea behind this that there will also be cut scores to determine proficiency, advanced proficiency? On this particular exam, or is it
I would assume so, but I'm going to have to defer to the commissioner.
Thank you. If you don't mind, Commissioner, if you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Mike Hannon. I'm the commissioner for the Department of Education, and through the chair, Senator Dunleavy. When the Common Core was put forth and adopted by 46 states, the United States Department of Education funded 2 consortia to develop assessments around the Common Core. Because our standards are so similar and so in alignment with the Common Core, I feel it's appropriate that we can access those as one of our choices. So we are looking at Smarter Balance right now. That will replace our current SBAs because those are based on our previous standards. Our new standards will have an assessment that measures our students' progress on the new standards. Thank you. In regards to cut scores, because several states, 46 states, will be adopting either PARC or Smarter Balance, our cut scores will be similar to those around the country.
So is it criterion-based? Is it norm-referenced? Is it, what when you're looking at this assessment, how would you classify the category?
It's a criterion-based. It's a standards-based. It's a measurement of proficiency towards the standards that we've identified for our students.
One last question through the chair.
Yeah,
so this assessment, if it's based upon these standards, which is semi-national standards, then an assessment taken here in Alaska would be similar to an assessment taken anywhere else in the nation. Similar.
Correct. Okay. Approximately half the states will be using Smarter Balance and about half it's a choice of states. The other half will be using PARC, but I would anticipate that there would be an alignment between the two that compares those scores.
14 or 15, did you say?
15 or 16.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And you anticipate this to occur when?
Either 2015, spring of, or spring of 2016.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. Representative Seaton has a question as well.
Thank you. On the same issue, I mean, it's very critical that assessments are correctly and fully aligned with what's being taught in the standard. And I'm concerned that we have the majority of the students in the urban school districts, those districts have adopted Common Core. And yet the state, for the rest of the students, is not adopting Common Core. It's adopting something that is somewhat similar. And so they're not going to be educated to the same Common Core standards. They're going to be adopted to a somewhat different Alaska standard. And I'm very concerned that we will get applicability and we will get the same level of assessment alignment between those that are actually adopted to the Common Core and teaching to the Common Core and the Alaska-based standard, which is somewhat different than that and being assessed on the same tool. And so it seems to me that it's going to take us millions of dollars in many years to go through the differentiation process and the testing process to find out whether we have a difference in testing and difference in results, because we're teaching to somewhat different standard but using the same assessment tool on those. Can you tell me what the state board is, why the state board is taking that action?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that's a great question. The Alaska standards, and Commissioner Hanley, feel free to jump in if I misspeak. The Alaska standards that you're a little concerned about being far enough away from the Common Core standards are not enough. They're not far enough away from the Common Core standards to make any difference. That's why we can take an assessment from one of these two consortium. We've been, you know, our standards have been vetted by the chief counsel, state school officers, all the superintendents or commissioners around the states. What was the other group that did?
The university did it.
University of Alaska did a vetting of our standards. And our standards have, what, added a tiny bit? Same rigor. In fact, we might even be a little more rigorous than the Common Core, but not substantially, not to the point that we've had any heartburn as a state board, at least what's been explained to us.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate the fact that you've brought the commissioner along for all the softball questions you're going to be getting here. Thank you, Commissioner.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, it is a good question, and it would really be erroneous for us as a department to consider an assessment that doesn't measure what we're teaching. And I'll just give you a couple examples of why we're not a Common Core state, and it may clarify that a bit for you. The rules came out when the Common Core was set that you could not touch the Common Core. They're set in stone. You could add up to 15%, but you couldn't touch them. We had extensive stakeholder input in the development of our standards. We referenced the Common Core heavily. Places where we differed in the Common Core, any place that we differed in the Common Core, we had people from the development team of the Common Core check for the rigor of our standards to make sure we weren't lessening the rigor. I'll give you an example. Patterning. Simple learning AB patterns is a standard that we have in kindergarten right now. And they sit down around the calendar and they study apples, orange, you know, that kind of patterning. In the Common Core, it comes in late second grade, early third grade. We chose to keep that patterning skill in kindergarten and change up to that so that it continues on. Is it a difference? Yes. Did we add? We've got a little bit different there. We've also added some language in regards to reading. And there were just a couple places where we chose to change the reading and put in beginning reading skills in kindergarten and first grade would say with support. We added that term with support in the second grade as well for one, some of the higher level reading skills. It was simply a change of wording. But because of those small changes and those changes, we've made some in math as well. We've actually added some additional standards in math. But because of those simple changes that are relatively small, we can't call ourselves a Common Core state. And so officially, we're not a Common Core state. In practice, as Chair Mariner mentioned, we have the same standards as the rest of the country. So I'm confident that the smarter balanced assessment, if we choose to go that way, and that's what we're pursuing right now, will measure what we're teaching in our schools.
Please continue, Representative.
I'm just concerned that we have half of our, or more than half of our students being aligned and adopted Common Core by the district, and we have the other students across the state that are not. It may be 15% different, but when the alignment of Common Core assessment with Common Core standards is there, and now we're teaching a large proportion of our students, especially rural students and all, not to the Common Core standard, a different, slightly different, maybe 15%, you say, how are we going to compare the districts that have adopted the Common Core and are teaching to that, and what is going to be the implication between the assessments that come back from those districts that have the Common Core, and how do you compare that to the other school districts that don't have the Common Core, and all of a sudden we have a variable, so we can't compare school districts anymore because they actually have somewhat different
right. Through the chair, they essentially aren't different standards. We have four districts out of our 54 that have adopted the Common Core. And that doesn't cause me heartburn because our standards are essentially the same. When we say in a second grade standard with support on one particular standard, that's a change that says now we're not Common Core, but the standard of what needs to be learned, the phonemic awareness and the phonics, the standard remains the same. The language in there changed slightly. Yeah. So that's, we're measuring the same thing. We're measuring the same set of standards with some different verbiage in there based on stakeholder input.
Thank you. Mr. Mariner.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, and correct me if I'm wrong, Commissioner, I also believe that those four districts that have adopted the Common Core are also required to teach to the K-12 standards of the state, correct? So
they're required to be assessed on those. Correct, but since if they were different, we'd have to have a conversation with those districts and say, okay, you're teaching something different than what we're going to assess. You're going to need to make sure you cover these extra standards. We haven't had to have that conversation. I've had it with Anchorage, but I'm comfortable with if they choose to say officially we're going to use Common Core, this booklet. You'd have to look hard to find the differences. I'd be glad to share with you the differences. We had the Council of Chief State School Officers do the side-by-side, and 95%+ identical. Those couple changes are small, and in some sense it's semantic, but for that reason we didn't set the rules of whether we could call ourselves a Common Core state or not. So.
Thank you. Representative Lindo.
I guess following along on the line of Representative Seaton, I guess I don't see, you mentioned classrooms in which under one system patterning was taught in second grade, and another system patterning was taught in kindergarten, and I got here late so I'm not really sure what patterning is. But assuming that it is important, I mean, the difference between kindergarten and second grade would seem to be relatively substantial.
Correct. And through the chair, our standards, the ones that we've adopted, have patterning in kindergarten and build up to third grade. So ours have additional standards. We have additional standards in math as well. But because we made those changes, because we put those things in place, we're not Common Core. So if anything, a district like Anchorage would need to pay attention to those few grades before patterning is taught in Common Core would need to address those earlier. So they wouldn't necessarily be assessed earlier. We don't assess until third grade, but it would behoove those districts that are adopting Common Core to make sure that they've paid attention to the things that we've added to the Common Core.
Thank you, Representative Ladue. Other questions? Okay, thanks very much. Let us move on then, please, Chair Mariner.
Okay, if you don't mind to turn to page 4. APS, Alaska Public Scholarship, wonderful. I don't know if you've had your presentation yet on that or not. The large, many-page report, I actually have a copy of it here. Wonderful things are happening with that. Thank you so much for supporting that over the last few years. Just wanted to point out a couple things here. The regulations have changed the minimum work key scores required for this scholarship to be used for CTE type programs. In the past, prior to this change, it was required in there were three assessments: reading for information, locating information, and applied math. And you had to have a 555. I don't know how much detail you want, but the reading for information.
No, but once you mention it, you've got to explain it.
So reading for information, you can get a 7. That's the highest. Locating information, you get a 6. And then the applied math, you can get a 7. So 7, 6, 7. So you had to have 555. It was called the gold certificate, gold standard. What we found was, and that was the base to get an APS scholarship to go into the trades or CTE field. What we had discovered was that the gold standard was actually, it was basically the equivalent of having a BA. And so we have moved the requirement to a combined 13 with no lower than 4. And that aligns more with what the industry's requesting in those sorts of fields. So we did that, assuming that's going to open up the door to more recipients for the APS for the CTE fields. Also wanted to point out the high school level courses taken prior to high school.
I'm sorry, Representative.
Yes. Mayor, could I ask you to spell out you're using a fair number of acronyms, RCT, ACTE. I'm going by kind of fast.
I'm so sorry.
First reference, just give me a full statement.
I think CTE. CTE is where we...
CTE, Career and Technical Education. It's kind of, I guess, the most recent term for vocab. Okay, no problem.
We have to learn these acronyms with education. You know, it goes through so fast. Yes. We should have a cheat sheet right here. Yeah. Representative Ladue.
Are these performance scholarships able to be used outside of Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Ladue, they are not. It's for institutions within the state of Alaska.
And is that all institutions within the state of Alaska, or is it just the state institutions?
Right now, through the chair, Representative Ladue, there are private institutions. I mean, APU is there. Western Baptist is there. I mean, it's not just the state organizations.
So can I follow up on a third question,
please,
although
please,
this
continue.
Might be getting into a can of worms here. Why is that constitutionally okay if giving vouchers to religious schools in K through 12 is not okay? I'm just curious about that.
And through the chair, Representative Ladue, that's beyond my pay grade at this point. I don't really have an answer for that. I know what you're mentioning, though.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. When we instituted the high school graduation qualifying exam way back, I guess it was watered down from its initial form because people weren't passing it enough. Enough people weren't passing, and consequently, now it's in a form that sometimes 7th and 8th graders pass, as I'm sure you're aware, and other kids may never pass it, but that's another point. And that's always worried me because it doesn't mean what it was supposed to mean, and I think we should be done with it. But one of the things that I think is a really important point about the Alaska Performance Scholarship is it's not really about giving scholarship money to kids. It's about asking kids, it's a carrot to ask kids to reach for rigor and for school districts to be able to provide the courses that are needed for people to qualify for those scholarships. So without knowing exactly how the tests are measured in work keys, and you've talked about changing from the standard of 5-5 or 7-5-5 to a total of 13.
Yeah.
That gives me a little alarm bell. Are we watering down our qualifications right out of the chute, and giving kids who maybe haven't achieved what we wanted them to achieve the scholarship anyway?
So is that a question, or are you?
That's a question.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner. Again, we had found, or we were shown the research that the 5-5-5, it was the equivalent of having a BA for the student. And so, again, we also were shown the research by the department, and you know, they gave us pages and pages showing the different fields of study, the different trades, and so we wrestled through all that information, and it was determined that the state board felt comfortable enough voting it to 13 with no higher than 4 to receive the APS. I understand your question, and it was a robust discussion at the board level.
Through the chair, if I might, I'd like to see some of that information, because that is a concern for me.
Okay, thank you. I would like to ask the members to hold their questions, write them down, and we only have a half an hour before some of our members have to leave, and I'd hate to have them not hear your entire presentation. But Representative Drummond, something that needs to be asked.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate getting in one more question.
Sure.
You've said it now twice. The equivalent of having a BA, that's before they've even gotten to college, passing the having the score of 5-5-5 was the equivalent of having a BA. Can you explain that, please?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, I'm going to take a lifeline. Commissioner, come on up.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Drummond, the reference is really when we looked at the careers that a 5-5-5 would enable a student to get. And WorkKeys has done a nice job of saying, if a student gets this score, these are the kind of jobs or careers that they could head into. What we found is a 5-5-5, the jobs that they could get into all required a BA. Doesn't mean that, you know, having a 5-5-5 is the same as a BA, but all those careers required a college education. And it was clear from the conversation in the legislature that we wanted a college track and a career track. And so by changing it to 2 4s and a 5, a total of 13, that it aligned with high-level careers that could support an individual and a family, but didn't necessarily require a BA.
Okay, so in other words, it's not the achieving a 5-5-5 is not the equivalent of having a BA, but it's having the student on track towards a BA.
It's more in alignment with careers that require a BA. Mm-hmm. And so we felt that we already have the scores that require a BA. Those are the ACT and SAT scores. The career track was meant to aim towards careers that didn't require the BA. So.
How about those of us who have BSs?
Bachelor's degrees.
As I did.
Four-year bachelor's degrees.
Thank you. I appreciate the questions are very important. They need to be answered, and we will get to them. But if you'd kindly hold your questions for the next 30 minutes, so we'll allow the chairman to make his presentation. And after that, we'll have plenty of time. Some of you I know have to leave at 9 o'clock, and the rest of us will certainly stay and make sure we get through all the questions we have. Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you. So still on page 4, I just wanted to mention, again, with the Alaska Performance Scholarship, we have allowed high school level courses, APS rigor courses, to be counted for the Alaska Performance Scholarship if you take them prior to high school. We have a lot of students in middle school taking Algebra 1, for example, those sorts of things. And so that was one I wanted to point out. Also, we've allowed IB International Baccalaureate, for those of you who like to have acronyms explained. Courses are also going to be allowed, just like AP Advanced Placement classes. 70% instruction requirement in statute, page 4. So, as you all know, in law, the districts have to spend at least 70% of their instruction, their monies on instruction. That includes teacher salaries. So, small districts, economies of scale, inevitably we have quite a few annual, we have waivers that come our way annually. And as long as the districts have shown that it's out of their control, something out of their control, like high energy costs or travel costs, and it's usually small districts and rural districts. And yet last year, we, for the first time as a board, from what I understand, did not approve a waiver. And I'm bringing this up, I mention it just because on page 5 it talks about the resolutions that the state board had passed in 07 and 09, basically asking the legislature to revisit that law. But after the robust discussions that we had as a board over this issue, we have rescinded those resolutions. And so as a board, we are saying we understand the rationale for why that law was put into place in the first place. We like the fact that it is the one way that we can basically take a look at some of these districts' finances. Not that we want to get too nitty-gritty, and anyway, I just wanted to point out that we rescinded those two resolutions.
You realize how hard it is to follow your own rules when I'm not asking questions. But I'm sorry. I'm going to bite my tongue, and please continue.
Oh, great. Well, segue into the next section there, resolutions. In addition to the resolution for Cindy Curran, Director of Teaching and Learning Support, just honoring her, thanking her for one that's not in the packet is because we just passed a resolution here last month in 2013, so it'll actually be in the packet next year. But I did want to mention that we just passed, and I don't know if you have that in front of you there, but there's a little article from the Fairbanks Newsminer from about, I think, 2 days ago, as a photograph of some folks on the
yes,
front.
Yes, we do have that. Thank you.
Yeah. And I don't know how many of you know that this is the 100-year centennial celebration of the first climb of Denali, Mount McKinley. It was summited in 1913, and the story is fascinating, and I could regale you on some of the details. But suffice it to say, some of the blood descendants of the initial climb team, and it was Archdeacon, I believe. He was an Archdeacon Hudson Stuck. He's got one descendant. Harry Karstens, who ended up becoming the first superintendent of Denali National Park. Two of his descendants are climbing it. And then Walter Harper, who was an Alaskan native fella, and he was the very first one to set foot on the summit. He was, I guess they had eaten something really nasty the night before, and the two others really were affected, and he basically kind of drugged the two up to the summit. It was pretty fascinating. And so he was the very first on the summit, and they have a blood descendant of his who's living in Anchorage right now, a young guy. And so they're going to be climbing that in June. And they're going to be videotaping it. They got a videographer going along with them. They're going to stream it on the web. Too bad it's June 7th after the students are out of school, but they are going to put together a documentary on it. And anyway, it's supposed to be as educational as they can possibly make it. So I just wanted to mention that to everybody. Collaboration with the University of Alaska, bottom of page 5. After about a hiatus of a decade, I understand, the boards met in June concurrently and in Anchorage. And since then, the two chairs of the Board of Regents and myself and President Gamble and Commissioner Hanley have met two different times since then. We're meeting again in June. Basically just wanted to say it's going very well. We're calling it an alignment initiative. We're trying to align a number of things, K-12 through, or they're calling it P-20, preschool through 20. page 6, I wanted to mention where it says UA could offer first-year courses, for example, Math 107, which is their college algebra, online for free. And this was President Gamble basically saying, hey, this is something that I've been thinking about doing. So online for free, middle school and high school teachers, tutors, parents could build the course fundamentals. The students could then take the assessment for free, and if they ended up passing it, they could pay for the credit. So he's starting to think about options for MOOCs, massive open online courses, I think is what they're calling. And I also wanted to point out there, the university has put together a teacher education consortium, and we met in September and we're meeting again in March. And we're basically taking a look at the teacher education programs in the UA system, just to see how we can improve those. Let's see, moving on to page, let's see, actually I think we're jumping to page 13. I wanted to mention suicide awareness and prevention training. SB 137, which was signed into law not too long ago in September. Good, it's a good law. I wanted to let everybody know I'm an educator. I work in the field, so it's part of my annual requirement is to do this suicide training, and I have particularly been affected by the Jason Foundation tutorial that they've got. It's an online training tutorial. It's very powerful. I just wanted to commend the legislature for passing that and requiring that in schools. And we're flipping again to, this is the whole section on libraries, archives, and museums, starting on page 16. Obviously, libraries, archives, and museums are doing wonderful and varied things. The only thing I wanted to really mention was the SLAM project that you all know is going on. I know personally, I'm staying at the Prospector Hotel, and the huge open pit mine is right out my window, and they've got a pump that's sucking water all the time, and good thing I brought my foam earplugs from town, and I was able to get some sleep. But anyway, thank you to the legislature for continuing to support that.
We don't think of it as an open pit mine. I want to thank you for that comment.
It looks like that out my window.
Thank you.
And actually, other than pointing out on pages 23 and, let's see, 24 and 25, just recommendations from the State Board. Obviously, we feel strongly that the new K-12 standards, as well as the new educator evaluations, regulations, are key to increasing academic achievement for all students, as our mission statement says. Also wanted to put a plug in for consideration of the governor's K-12 budget proposals, which are detailed there on pages 24 and 25. That's it for my official report. Thank you for your time and attention. If anyone has any additional questions, if you have time.
Yes, we have planned. I appreciate your presentation, Mr. Chairman. Could you specifically spend a couple of minutes on the governor's recommendations and his State of the State speech on graduation and digital learning, just to make sure we understand how we're going to comply with the suggestion of the governor that by 2020 we have only a 10% we have 90% graduation rates, and that we become the poster child of the digital world. If you'd comment on how we're going to achieve that, I'd appreciate it.
You know, I'm going to take a lifeline again, Chair Stevens, and ask.
Well, actually, I've already asked him, so so I'm sorry. I just wanted to get the perspective from the board.
Well, again, I'm going to just be able. I'm not immersed in the details like the folks who work in the department. I do know that there's a high level of excitement about the Jobs for Alaska, Alaska's graduates, JAG.
Right.
There's a lot of excitement for it. I guess there's a lot of research. 33 different states now have been doing this for a while, and the research is showing that it's been highly effective. I believe a lot of the excitement over it is because of that research, and that, you know, we do something similar here with these targeted students who I guess are at risk students, and I guess it's targeting some juniors and seniors in a number of the different districts around the state. And you know, 800,000 only goes so far, but at least it's a start, and the research shows that it's been effective. So,
thank you,
know there's
Sharon.
Excitement on
appreciate
that.
Appreciate that. Questions from Senator House members of the Education Committee? Senator Gardner.
I'll just take the opportunity to ask if you have an opinion about the continuing usage and the lost instructional time and such of the high school graduation qualifying exam.
Through the chair, can you repeat that, Senator Gardner?
Do you think we should continue using the high school graduation qualifying exam?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, I think that that's a great conversation to have, especially as we're looking in 15 or 16 to replace our current assessment with the new assessment that's going to be coming online. I think that's a great conversation to have.
Thank you.
Thank you. Could you talk a little about, you know, I've got to say, as I've been here for 13 years now, I've learned a lot more about early education, how important that is, and I've come to believe that it is crucial. Could you comment on the parental involvement and the whole early literacy issue about trying to make sure that children can read by the time, well, at the right level by the time they get to third grade? Could you just sort of explore the commitment of the board to early literacy and parental involvement?
Well, through the chair, to the chair, Stevens, commitment of the board in the sense that we're committed to trying to help educate the students in Alaska the best possible. I mean, obviously, we're a state that has voluntary pre-K. I don't think the discussion's really been had that I know of, that I've been hearing anybody talking about making that compulsory. So that's where we are as a state. The programs that, the data that we've seen, I guess there's been a pilot program for the last three years, these pre-K programs. The data is showing that they're effective. So as a board, we've been supportive of the effectiveness of these programs.
Yeah, thank you. I guess I'm just really getting at it. What can we do to get parents involved to make sure that their children, by the time they come to school, are ready to read, and are we doing anything? I got to tell you that there's some districts, some states, where they provide a packet to young parents before their children are even 3 years old to help make sure that the kids are ready.
Chair Stevens, I believe that our state, through programs like Best Beginnings and some of these other programs, I think we have a number of programs that are reaching out in that exact way, mailing packets to folks, but I don't know the details.
We can discuss that later, yeah. Good, thank you very much. Representative Drummond.
But that's a great idea. I mean,
thank
absolutely,
you.
The more we can get books into the hands of the families, absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mariner, I think I just heard you say that we have voluntary pre-K in this state. I believe we're one of the states that does not have voluntary pre-K. There's a pilot program that I believe has also been reduced in scope. So to say that we have voluntary pre-K is not, I don't believe that's a correct statement.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, I guess I'm not quite understanding. So can you explain that a little more? I guess I'm...
It was you who stated that Alaska is a voluntary pre-K state, and I believe we are one of the few states that does not provide even voluntary pre-K options statewide.
Okay, so when I'm saying voluntary, I mean that parents have the ability or that they can choose to bring their child. You're saying that
in your exist in my it, to my knowledge in every school, so that if a parent in a particular
I see what you're saying.
School wanted to
I see
take
what you're
up
saying.
The option of pre-K, they couldn't do it because it is not available in every school.
I understand what you're saying. I believe that's indeed the case. I believe that is the case.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Drummond. Representative Gattis, you're okay?
I was just going to follow up there. You're right.
Representative Lejeune.
What sort of testing do we have in the early grades to make sure that a child can read by the time he finishes, let's say, third grade, where there's much testing that suggests that if he doesn't read by third grade, we've really got problems?
That's a great question. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux. Commissioner Hanley, can you correct me if I'm wrong, but districts choose what those assessments are going to be and how often they're used, and districts are using things like DIBELS for the younger grades? MAPS, some of these, and these are acronyms. I don't even know what they stand for. I apologize. Representative Sadler.
Just very briefly, statewide we only have the developmental profile in kindergarten, which is an overall screening of development, not necessarily literacy. There's a $320,000 proposal in the governor's budget this year to implement a statewide universal screening tool so we get that early identification for teachers to identify those needs. And that would be for kindergarten through third grade.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Ledoux.
And would that provide that if the child who is screened shows that he is not at, let's say, the third grade level, he wouldn't be promoted to the fourth grade?
Through the chair, this is a universal screening tool for kindergarten through third grade. It doesn't address retention in third grade. It's a different part of the conversation when we look at early literacy. We look at early identification, we look at early intervention, and then we look at a decision in third grade of what we would do. But the conversation of retention, mandatory retention in third grade, is not something we've had to depth yet.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This is for Commissioner Hanley. I know there's been mixed data. This is, again, referring to early, making sure that kids can read, you know, by the time they're in third, fourth grade. I know there's been mixed data in regards to our intervention programs like Head Start and things like that. We do fund it quite heavily. There's a lot of programs. However, we're still last in the nation, as everybody knows, with the NAEP, the NAEP scores. So I guess I'm very interested to see, you can't teach a kid to walk before they crawl. And in Finland, they start school in second grade. I'm really curious to see if anybody, and yet they have some of the highest outcomes in the world in their education.
They start school in?
So when they're seven.
When they're seven.
Yes.
Okay.
When they're seven. Second grade.
Right.
Okay. So what my question is what are they doing that is so dramatically different than what we're doing? Has anyone done any research in regards to that to become so outstanding, you know, in the end?
Yes, through the chair. It's a broad conversation that probably we wouldn't have here. I think what we can't do when we compare ourselves to Finland is pick out one thing and say, that's it. We can't say, well, they honor their teachers and they pay them a lot. That's all we have to do. They start later than we do. We should just put them back, and that's all we have to do. I think we need to look at the context of a society that provides universal health care, very few single-family parents. We need to look at the whole context and then say, what can we do? What can we take that's the best of Finland and apply to Alaska, apply to our system? So there's a lot of components there that I think, you know, that are connected to make Finland what it is. And it's much broader than an overview topic today. I'd be glad to have that conversation with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we will follow up on those questions. Further questions? Could you, Senator Huggins?
Yeah. Hey, Jim, under the collaboration with the university system, AccuPlacer?
Yeah.
I've heard several accounts of that. I've talked to President Gamble. The question is it presently available to schools to start in the 10th grade, or what is available to schools when to take AccuPlacer, and who pays for it?
Commissioner, would you mind popping back up just to make sure that I'm not misspeaking? Through the chair, Senator Huggins, it's my understanding that currently the university system funds the AccuPlacer for juniors and seniors who want to take it. Now it's a voluntary thing, and so the new twist here is that they are saying we'd be interested in actually, you know, moving it down to the 10th grade level, which we're having some conversations about, because there's a chance with the new standards being assessed, and they're going to be assessed, from what we understand, 3rd through 8th grade, not 9th and 10th, and then 11th. So there's some wiggle room there in the 10th grade. So these are just some initial discussions. Obviously, the university believes in the AccuPlacer, and they use it for their math and their English and anything else. I don't know exactly, but I know they do it for their math and their English entrance exam. And the rationale for moving it down to the 10th grade just gives students and advisors, families, more information about where they are and what they need to do for the next couple of years while they're in the K-12 system.
Thank you, Senator Hargis.
Yeah, just to follow up, as I heard President Gamble say that if we didn't give the test earlier, it really was just an indicator, but you couldn't have any corrective measures because it was too late. Right, so my follow-up question is, are we going to make a call of going to the 10th grade or the 9th? I mean, whatever the grade is, it's earlier. Is there a, do we have a horizon where we're going to make that call?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, we are making that call, and I think it's really been a result of us working closely with the university system and those meetings that the board has had with the regents. I greatly appreciate President Gamble's vision of stepping in and preparing kids for the university, rather than just saying, "Look, you have to do a better job of getting your kids there." We're working together and saying, "How can we do that?" And then they're asking that same question. So his suggestion is, he says, we'll pay for the acupuncture. That's what we use to place our kids correctly in school, in the university system. I'd like to see it in 10th grade. And so we're looking at what that would entail. Would we also incorporate another formative assessment like the PSAT, which prepares students, gives students tools for the SAT, or the PLAN, which prepares students for the ACT. So using that 10th grade is a conversation we've had to say, take some formative assessments to give you an idea of the skills you need and work with the university to determine what those would be.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator, for the questions. Could you comment on the board's position on the Moore case, and are we just leaving it up to the administration to comply with it, or is the board giving any direction, overall direction, to the department on the Moore case, and how are we doing on that, and what are the plans to achieve the court's ruling?
So, Chair Stevens, to answer your question, yes, the board is staying informed. The department keeps us informed as how things are going with the case. But yes, the nuts and bolts are dealt with. I guess the commissioner is on the committee that meets on a pretty regular basis.
And we can get to that, and I appreciate that. Commissioner, I just want to make sure that the board isn't fully engaged. This is such an important decision.
Absolutely.
That it has ramifications for years throughout the state.
Well, so I was just asking for some more clarification the other day by, you know, Commissioner, there's one of those components in there that requires districts to make sure that their student discipline policies are out and available and well-known by every constituent. And I needed to know more about why that was, and mm-hmm. So we're having those conversations.
Right.
And there's a rationale for everything that's in the Moore case.
Yes, thank you very much. Further questions or comments? I'm sorry, we have this tradition in the House of sending notes. Let's see. Oh, thank you. Yes, I understand. Everyone does have meetings to go to. Representative Seaton, did you have a comment or question?
I did, and that was the subject of the high school exit exam has come up, and you said that's a great discussion, but we're not having that discussion between the board and the education committee. So I'm anticipating that from what you're saying is whatever the education committee or the legislature comes up, that's fine with you guys, because we haven't been receiving any communication from the board about that conversation. So I'm trying to read behind the wording of what that means. The board has no position on whether it should remain or go away. Is that?
Yeah, I was just going to say, through the chair, Representative Seaton, we haven't had any conversations within the last probably year. I mean, I can't remember. I've been on the board now. This is my third year. Time's passing fast. So again, we'd be open to a conversation about that. Absolutely. But we just haven't had a real robust, by any means, conversation.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to say that, you know, it's been a topic of conversation here in the legislature and in the education committee for quite a while. So I think that if we're willing to have that conversation, we ought to have some venue where that conversation takes place, because otherwise what's going to happen is there may be a decision made and then it'll be like, oh, we didn't know. And we want to make sure that you have all the ability to have input from the state board perspective. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Reverend Seaton. Further comments or questions? Thank you very much. Are there other members of the board here with you, Mr. Arnar?
Not today.
We have a list of them, so we know who they all are. And appreciate
track them down if you want.
We will track them down. Yes. Thank you very much. With that, we're adjourned.